And yet, as Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh says, we enter our. My life was given to me. I did not make myself, and this is how it is. We receive who we are in many ways before we choose who we will become. As human beings, our lives begin and never leave the soil of this earth that shapes us through blood, kinship, genes, culture, associations, social systems, networks of relationships, and extended communities. Even when we do not directly know the people whose lives are linked with ours, even when we do not directly know the people whose lives are linked with ours, our lives unfold in relationship to theirs. And this is how it is with covenant as well. We are born into relationship before we shape relationships by our conscious intention. We inherit covenant before we create covenant. We do not make ourselves. We are given the gift of life, the gift of the earth that sustains life, and the gift of one another, here, now, and in all the generations leading up to now. As the Brian Wren hymn sings it, we are not our own. Earth forms us, human leaves on nature's growing vine, fruit of many generations, and then that last line we learned to sing, seeds of life divine. Covenant making must begin with the question, what have we been given? What is the covenant we are already in? Explicit covenant making is a human response to a gift from a source larger than ourselves. In our own time, the Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams has emphasized this. Let us remember his voice. Traditionally, our churches, our congregations have been grounded in a covenant binding us together. But this enterprise of maintaining the network is itself not to be understood as simply a human enterprise. It is a response to a divinely given creative power, a sustaining power, a community transforming power. This power is ultimately not of our own making. There is room to imagine this source larger than ourselves in multiple ways. Earth itself, the spirit of life, God, Buddha nature, the communion of all souls, universal love. The point is, there is a power that undergirds our covenant making that is more than the power of our will and decision making. In fact, our covenant making is a response to this power, a co-working with this power. We make this response most fundamentally not by what we say, but by what we do. By coming together in peace, committing ourselves to be co-workers with the source of life, committing ourselves to be co-workers with the source of life. Covenant is first most not a verbal agreement, but a practice. Not a verbal agreement, but a practice. Mae Sarton comes to mind from our hymnal, where she says, help us to be always hopeful gardeners of the Spirit. Before the service, I was talking to some people about the subject of race seminar that we had on, or gathering, I guess I would say, that we had on Tuesday. And when I read James Luther Adams, it is a response to a divinely given creative power, a sustaining power, a community-transforming power. It connected with my experience of that evening, because I've said it was a transforming evening. And you go, what did it change, all of this? But 40-some people in that room, we went from an edgy, many of us defensive connection in the beginning to say, I'm not racist. I don't do anything that's racist. To an understanding at the end of a definition of racism that was a little different from racial prejudice. It was racial prejudice plus power is racism. And then we talked about white privilege, and we were able to deal with those subjects. Where I'm going with this is we were transformed in 2 hours from a gathering disjointed to a group together in sort of common cause and working with difficult concepts. And here's where the transforming piece, sort of the grace that we didn't know was going to happen and didn't even recognize till later. We did this in a unique atmosphere. We did this in something I've never seen in our, quote, anti-racism work. We did it in a gathering of family. And the reason I say that is the people leading it were Michael Carter, Reverend Michael Carter, and Judy Long, and then myself. Well, those of you who don't know, Michael and Judy were married. They're still connected, but Michael and Judy, and then their daughter Kevin was there doing her homework in the room next door. Michael's an African-American man who is a minister, Unitarian Universalist minister, who was a diversity training officer at Memorial Mission. So, and Judy is the director of the free clinics. And so we had an African-American professional, a woman professional, and then straight white guy, me, professional up there. But we all knew each other, and it was family. And it may not seem a big deal to you, but it was. In the sense, and we were living it. They had to move to get Kevin with her homework while we were doing all this work together in the room. Community transforming power. And in that moment, the community was transformed. October 11th, the next one. Be there, we'll catch you up. Committing ourselves to be co-workers with the source of life. Covenant is our theme for the month from our Soul Matters materials. And I've talked about our sense of covenant regularly over the years. And still, it's a good focus and reminder as a start for the program year, which also happens to be a presidential election year. But the notion of covenant is an incarnation, a manifestation of something more than ourselves into which we emerge and to which we belong. Whether we pay attention to it or not, covenant is one way the traditions of Unitarian and Universalism have framed the religious message of right relationship and compassion. Actually, right living, as it were. As a part of that which is more than our own, beyond us, and in us. Whatever you call it, or whether you call it anything or not, it's being a part of something more. Much of the text that follows is taken from parts of my earlier talks. Committing ourselves to be co-workers with the source of life. Not just money makers, store goers, computer turner oners, but co-workers with the source of life. For as David Pohl says in the opening words, number 436, we come to this time and this place to reclaim the vision of an earth made fair and all her people one. Almost 3 years ago, I learned about the African word Ubuntu. How many of you have heard that now or seen it online, Ubuntu? I used it in my talk for Martin Luther King Day that year entitled A Network of Mutuality. The title is from a line by Dr. King and from our reading number 584 of the same name. A network of mutuality. Ubuntu can be translated as I am because you are. I am because you are. It's another way to think about the covenants and relationships into which we as individuals who really aren't so individual are born. There are relationships and covenants that come with the embodiment, this gift of life. We break or ignore them at our peril, and when we do, we throw our life and all life out of balance. Archbishop Desmond Tutu defined Ubuntu this way: I am a human being. I am a human being because I belong, I participate, I share. He didn't say, I am a human doing. He says, I am a human being because I belong, I participate, I share. I am because you are. Nelson Mandela took this notion of living within the covenant of Ubuntu so seriously that he gave it form in his Truth and Reconciliation Council that he established to deal with the wrongs of apartheid in South Africa rather than relying on simply punitive and retributive justice. He believed that the covenant that was Ubuntu, I am because you are, had the power to reconnect a divided and broken South Africa. We are drawn to such examples of possibility. We are also drawn to lives lived with meaning and depth and connection, not just to nod our heads, not just for comfort. We actually are drawn to them in order to seek to make them more real in our lives and thus make our lives more real and meaningful to ourselves. The covenantal phrase, a network of mutuality, is taken from Martin Luther King's letter from a Birmingham jail written on April 13, 1963. Dr. King had been arrested for his part in the Birmingham civil rights campaign and the protests. We use that phrase a lot, civil rights, and we don't really think through what it means. It means the rights of the civilization, of the society, making them available to everyone, not just the special few. Civil rights, the rights of being an American. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny, he wrote. Then he added, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We hear those words as connecting all of us together in responsibility and mutual promise. We can also hear that Dr. King is using and intentionally using the language of universalism, an inescapable network of mutuality, where all are a part, a participant in the love of God. All have the right to live fully as part of that love. One human family, one origin, one nature, one destiny in an inclusive universe. And to behave differently is to break covenant with what is. And if and when human actions interfere with the right and opportunity of everyone to participate fully in the gift they have been given, that is not and cannot ever be right. That is unjust. It is injustice. And we, as part of the family, are called to come together and stand together to make things right. We must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation, Dr. King said, 1963. And what is the foundation of such a method? The foundation of such a method is love. Love. That's what he said. I nod in affirmation when I hear the words, an inescapable network of mutuality. When I hear a single garment of destiny, the foundation of peace is love. I know that the message that all religions share is one of compassion. In order to live well, I am called to expand my circle of compassion. I am moved when I hear that you cannot diminish another without diminishing yourself. I am moved when my family is wronged. I know that if I focus only on the comfort of my comfortable life, it will not be deeply comforting ever in the way of soulful belonging that I seek. Martin Luther King called it not just a network of mutuality, but an inescapable network of mutuality for love and justice and peace. Not only is it inescapable, it is the network, the very network of existence itself. Desmond Tutu, I am a human being because I belong, I participate, I share. I am because you are and because everything is. President Obama put it another way at Nelson Mandela's memorial in December 2013. We achieve ourselves by sharing ourselves with others and caring for those around us. We achieve ourselves by sharing ourselves with others and caring for those around us. That is how we live real lives and make good life real, not merely comfortable. And in doing so, we reclaim the vision of an earth made fair and all her people one. In 1998, Rebecca Parker didn't use the word Ubuntu as she focused on the concept and understanding of covenant. She began our reading for this morning saying, "Covenant most simply means to come together, as we are doing." It comes from the Latin co, together, and venir, meaning to come. More specifically means to come together by making a promise, as when two people promise to love and care for one another. When we do that, she says, the history of covenant making shows that the means for tremendous influence for the common good are in our hands. At a time when we're wondering, what can we do? I heard people this morning going, what can we do? I'm so upset. What can we do? The history of covenant making shows that the means for tremendous influence for the common good are in our hands. To be an influential force for good, what we need to do is establish more strongly in our congregational life and our personal life the practices that embody loving, just, and sustainable community. We need to be what we want to see. We need to be what we want to see. And in that way, make visible an alternative to the forms of oppression, alienation, and injustice alive in our time. Doing so will be a form of keeping faith with the covenant we are already in. She calls it the covenant of resistance to oppression. To fail to do so will be to break covenant with those who came before us, who built the house we gratefully inhabit. Why does any of this matter? Why should we even make the effort to come together? Why put our time here? In this world where it is so easy to react to anything we don't like, or that perhaps just doesn't entertain us enough, by going away from it, why not shop for something better? Why not just stay home? If it's inconvenient, why not do that? Inconvenient comes from the same Latin root as covenant. Inconvenire, or not coming together. Inconvenient. Folks, it's about family. One human family. Don't mess with family. Two people this week have asked me about our history. They, as if, do Unitarian Universalists have any? One asked about our connections to the Puritans. They're very direct. And this ongoing covenant into which we emerged as the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Hendersonville, North Carolina, is a good way to enter into that perspective. So turn to 471 in the hymnal. This whole page is devoted to covenants, promises made together. Many congregations around the country begin their services by reciting some version of one of these. We don't, but as you can see on our order of service, we have our own version. In our mission statement, we actually say we gather in covenant, in promise, an inclusive community of faith for all ages, and then we say what we do. So the history, look at 471. It was arranged by, as you see, Griswold Williams in the 1930s, but it's arranged from similar understandings that go all the way back to the very first settlements in America. Alice Blair Wesley begins her collection of men lectures that's titled Our Covenant, meaning Our Unitarian Universalist Covenant, with this covenant. And then she ties it directly to the founding documents of the church in which she was delivering the lecture. It's the first church in Dedham, Massachusetts. When they say first church, they mean it. It's in the first church record, book one, the founding families wrote down what they were deliberating when they wrote this covenant. When were they deliberating that? When were those notes taken? She has them as handwritten notes in the book. 1637, Dedham, Massachusetts. First Church was a founding Puritan congregation. Wesley read through the record and concludes saying, by far the most commonly used words in this written history are affection, affections, affectionately, embrace and love, loving, lovingly. Why? Because then and now and for as long as human history lasts, when all is said and done, she says, done and said some more, this is in italics, the integrity of the free church comes down to the loyalty to the spirit of love at work in the hearts and minds of the loyal members. The lay people who founded First Church Dedham knew so and clearly said so, and that is why we still say together so often in our congregations now, love is the doctrine of this church. So let's read through it ourselves and just change the words like church or God that you need to and see how it's been adapted in ways that would still be recognizable as related to the original sentiments. Sit there and do that. Rebecca Parker tells a story about going to a family reunion where she hadn't seen her family in years and years. And she got there and then she realized as she read the bumper stickers on the car and then she heard what her brothers and sisters were doing, it clicked in this aha experience that every one of those things fit her. And she said, we're all part of this family and we're related. We are before we ever realized who we were. So if you read these words and then you go, those don't fit me, but you can recognize them as members of the family at the family reunion. 473, love is the spirit of this church and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. I sat there last night reading through this while I was trying to watch a news show with the reactions to all the commentators to Friday and things particularly that Donald Trump had said and what was going on. And they were using the word, and they've used it in relation to Hillary too, but using the word lie a lot. And I was sitting here thinking about the quest of truth is its sacrament. But then I went back to the first part, love is the spirit here. Dwell together in peace, dwell together, inclusive world in peace, to seek the truth, how? In love, and to help one another. One human family, one nature, one origin, one destiny. A lot has been given to us, and we are in good company. We have good relatives, good ancestors. Think of the covenantal nature of our understanding of our religious orientation. When we say, what is the nature of all that is? What is the nature of God? When we use the universalist understanding, what is the one word that comes out? It's inclusive. One human family or family of being. And when we ask the question, what is the nature of being human, or what does it mean to live well, we find inspired understandings. Our Unitarian heritage gives us an exalted view of human possibility, of what we can do, with many religious exemplars who understood what it means to live well, but in how, in relation to, not the exclusive nature of what you specifically believe, but the inclusive nature of life and the universe, and how to make that real in our lives. How are we to live together as engaged beings, engaged with that nature of life, bringing the inclusive gift of life into reality in our lives and in our culture by how we live, by how we practice. There is the promise of a meaningful life, a life with meaning. It is a life-filled faith. It's a covenant, very simply. Engaged life and love, for life and love. We do not have to think alike to love alike. And still, this should all begin to look pretty familiar by now. It is our orientation in and to the covenant we are already in, the gift of life, the gift of the earth that sustains life, and the gift of one another. Why do such promises and their history matter? As Parker reminds us, they are an essential part of our practice, our practices. They are the communal, relational glue of understanding that takes us beyond mere doing and task to actually being what we want to see in our world. Being an alternative to what she calls the forms of oppression, alienation, and injustice alive in our time. When we speak of the beloved community, it begins here. To paraphrase Annie Dillard, there is no other place. There has never been a more opportune time. There never has been either of those. There is no other place, no more opportune time. There never has been. Why bother? Why bother to come together in promise? Why bother in our busy schedules to come together at all? Why not go our way on our own? I go back to our discussions of faith, not as a set of beliefs, but as meaning-making and deep belonging with life. We talked of faith as being deeply at home. Being deeply at home. To be deeply at home in this world is to dwell in a worthy faith. To be at home is to have a place in the scheme of life, a place where we are comfortable, know that we belong, can be who we are, and can honor, protect, and create what we truly love. So we bother. We bother for faith, in faith, to keep faith. Our religion orients us in the sense of something more. We are participating, participating, doing our part of a bigger picture, holding up our agreement of the covenant into which we find ourselves, the one we inherited before we could do our part or create it. The gift of life, the gift of the earth that sustains life, and the gift of one another. Because we are part of a larger loving covenant with life, we don't have to see how to fix everything in order to do something. Because we are part of a larger loving covenant with life, we don't have to see how to fix everything in order to do something. But what we can do as a part of being in right relationship, we can see as part, as our part, of a connected plan of right living. There then is meaning to what we do and what we choose to do all day, every day, with our daily lives. There's always meaning that is more than the choice that is merely entertaining or distracting. It's always sitting there. There is faith. That is, there is a larger meaning that our actions are a part of. There is something larger than us to which we belong, a greater belonging. Literally, you can think of it a way to be your deepest longing. Belonging by practicing and participating in the covenant of right living into which you were born. We show up for hope, even when it involves reframing our understanding so that daily moments of joy break into our awareness and ease our despair, and we come together in promise for the beloved community, the space for recreating the giftedness of what we have been given, even in the face of our anxieties and fears, the place that helps us to live generously rather than merely react negatively, and to engage life and love for life and love, committing and recommitting ourselves as co-workers with the source of life over and over and over again. And I would add, committing and recommitting ourselves to the best of ourselves over and over and over again. After all, it's family. So, here's what Rebecca Parker says. Let us covenant with one another. Let us make promises with one another. To keep faith with the source of life, knowing that we are not our own, earth made us. Let us covenant with one another to keep faith with the community of resistance, never to forget that life can be saved from that which threatens it by even small bands of people choosing to put into practice an alternative way of life. And let us covenant with one another to seek for an ever deeper awareness of that which springs up inwardly in us, even when our hearts are broken by our own failure. Even when our hearts are broken by our own failure or the failure of others cutting into our lives. Let us covenant even when we have done all we can and life is still broken. There is a universal love that has never broken faith with us and never will. This is the ground of our hope and the reason we can be bold in seeking to fulfill the promise. Let us covenant together.